You're back with Annie and Toby, and on the line we've got Philip Toner and Mike Rafferty. G'day, you guys.
Hello.
Hey, Annie, how are you?
Good. And the reason why we've got you out on a Saturday morning is because you are the editors of a great book coming out of the Sydney University Press called Captured, How Neoliberalism Transformed the Australian State. And now, after 40 years of neoliberalism, what is the verdict?
Well, it's a fairly negative one. That's what we found. Over the last 40 years, there was the promise that all these radical changes, privatisation and contracting out of government services, reducing corporate taxes, etc., suppressing wages, these policies would result in increased competition, improved living standards, improved quality of government services and government-funded services, and rising productivity, more rapid growth, economic growth. In fact, the outcome has largely been the opposite. It's delivered the exact opposite, and that's what the chapters in the book, most of them deal with, provide case studies of neoliberal public policy failure.
Yeah.
And the other chapters basically set out the sort of the ideas that animated these changes in public policy and changes in institutions, public institutions, over the last 40 years.
Well, it's actually quite fascinating because in a funny sort of a way, what it proves is that neoliberalism actually works exactly the way they wanted it to, which was to transfer huge amounts of wealth to a small percentage of people and to cripple everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Annie. And the key thing that when we talk about failure, I think what we mean is failure to the general public or to the majority of people. But for some people, if you think of the Gina Reinhart's, the sort of corporate elites, it's been a spectacularly successful period, as you said, because what they've been able to do is to transfer the costs of restructuring and the costs of normal economic life downwards onto the majority of us. So it has been a complete zero-sum game in many ways. You know, living standards have been pretty much stationary, and life's become more risky and more uncertain for most people. But one of the great things for the rich has been that they've pretty much had guaranteed escalation in their wealth. And, and the state has been... And I think this is the key finding we've tried to get to, is it's not just that neoliberalism has been about freeing up markets. It's actually been a state project to enforce those costs onto us and to transfer that wealth to the rich.
Yeah, well, as I like to say, is we are now paying for our own oppression. the thing that's really fascinating is the title, Captured. People are talking about corporate capture. And there's some fascinating case studies in this particular book that actually talks about things like neoliberal constitutionalism. This is fascinating.
Yeah, that's right. That was the chapter by Kristen Rundell, Professor of Law at Melbourne Uni. Yeah, she did a detailed study of the failure of governments to deal with the COVID quarantine cases, in particular in Melbourne, how the Commonwealth refused to basically accept its constitutional responsibilities for quarantine control in Australia, which is actually in the 1901 Constitution, and transferred that responsibility to the Victorian state government, and how the Victorian state government basically also failed to properly implement proper quarantine standards by basically putting all these people into private hotels with private security guards with minimal state supervision, and the resulting problems that are ensuing from that. It's a sort of a wonderful example of sort of neoliberal buck-passing.
Yeah, but what's more important is that the shrine to Westminster governance principles is besmirched, and it undermines the actual foundation of this, in inverted commas, democracy.
I think you've picked a really great example, and I think one of the things that we saw with this period of neoliberalism is that each time there's been an economic or social crisis, this neoliberal logic gets invoked, and what it's done systematically is to, you could say, strip away democratic rights, strip away our labour rights, and so on. And each time this either real or imagined crisis provides the cover for sort of deepening the sort of, as you said, the sort of way in which we are subordinated to this system.
Yeah, you know, that sounds almost like a far-right Trotskyist version of permanent revolution, huh?
Well, the funny thing is that the neoliberals were actually quite inspired by Trotsky and Lenin. In fact, if you read Hayek and so on, even Buchanan, they talked about themselves as being this outside group who needed to act in the sort of Leninist way, you know, the sort of vanguardist principle of getting inside the state to affect what they're trying to do. So the bizarre thing is that they were the ones who fully implemented this vanguardist approach.
Yeah, and it's also religious in its methodology, because it's now become the air we breathe, that it's about everything is about money and nothing is about life. Or as Thatcher would talk about, there is no such thing as society.
Yeah. You picked up a really important point here, which is that in some ways this is not a sort of social science as we might think about it. It can be falsified. It's a deeply philosophical position. And even all the failures that we could point out, and Phil edited another book on neoliberalism, we can point to the failures and to the pathologies, but it's beyond falsification, because, as you've said, it's really a philosophy that can't be falsified.
Yeah, just reminding listeners that we're talking to Philip Toner and Mike Rafferty, editors of Captured, How Neoliberalism Transformed the Australian State. It's published by the Sydney University Press, and it's a fascinating read. And it's also, as you've just pointed out, part of a group of books that you put out, because you want people to realise that we need to untie ourselves from this system.
Yeah, the system is, in a sense, in crisis. We've sort of do appear to be moving on to another as yet ill-defined sort of a new socio-economic system, the outlines of which are only vaguely known to us. But that was one of the reasons for doing this volume, was, and the previous volume, was just to highlight the failures, but also sort of try to chart a new way, because each of the authors was charged with coming up with their own suggestions for how things could be managed differently. It's probably worthwhile going back to that point about markets and the fact that the gap between the outcomes and the intention is just so wide, but it doesn't seem to sort of slow these neoliberal advocates down. You just simply have to be reading, for example, the editorial pages of the Financial Review, Australian Financial Review. It's very much imbued with this philosophy. They could be writing the same editorials in the late 1970s or early 1980s. It's still the same line after 40 or 50 years. And again, it's this sort of semi-religious quality the neoliberals imbue to markets. It's this idea of markets being a superior information gathering and information processing entity or system that's superior to any other human form of organisation. It is imbued with a sort of a metaphysical sort of attributes of all-knowing, all-seeing, and infinitely rational way of organising society, the economy and society, is through markets. And the key point we make in the book, that was really what they were up to, was capturing the state, sort of the neoliberal idealists, as it were, capturing the state to implement this sort of messianic project of imposing what they saw as market discipline on a befuddled populace.
You know, it's funny, it just brought to mind springtime in Germany.
So winter for Poland and France, that's right.
you brought up Haken. That crew of people were actually autocrats, and what they're trying, and this is also very reminiscent, where we are at the moment is kind of reminiscent of the 17th century in England, where, you know, you had something like two people owning practically the entire country.
I think your point here is that a lot of people get the wrong impression when we talk about, when neoliberalism and those their advocates talk about freedom and so on, they honestly don't mean it. I mean, you've got to remember all of the key neoliberals, that's Friedman, Hayek and Buchanan, had a huge role in the barbarous Pinochet regime, and they justified this not just a suspension of democracy, but it's basically elimination on the basis that, there was some sort of socialist threat. But their, as you said, their attraction towards autocrats is not an accident. And I think what we're seeing in Australia is gradually eroding role of democracy. I think that's part of that captured idea that, you know, in Australia, we have the corporate lobbying group per capita and is actually larger than in the US.
I know that some of your authors have put forward different ways that things could progress in a sort of better way, as it were, as these people have moved what is the middle ground further and further right, because Australians actually like a middle ground, don't they?
To some extent, there, I suppose, a major appeal is of many of the authors is some sort of return to social democracy. That was really a target for a quite conscious target for neoliberals when they. In the 1970s, during the kicked off the whole enterprise, was the rise of stagflation and opposition by corporations to rising worker militancy in the late 60s and early 70s. It was a series of economic crises that, as it were, created the opportunity for these ideas, which had been around for about 40 years.
Yeah, percolating in the background like mould.
It created, it was a confluence of these ideas plus economic interests who, in a sense, the major corporations, especially those tied to international capital and globalisation, the finance sector, etc.
I mean, we have to finish up, but I just want to finish up with something that was very interesting in the book, is that the neoliberal train in Australia happened at a political level without any actual discussion. Now, that should make people a bit scared in the Australian context.
I think what I think sort of interesting too is that both political parties bought into neoliberalism. So in a sense, you could say that social democracy was hollowed out inside the political parties first, and then in as well as inside the state, and that really is, as you've said, that's something that needs to be accounted with, I guess.
Thank you. We have to stop. I've only got minutes to go. I know we could have had a lot longer conversation, but thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, you, Lenny.
Yeah.
Bye.
by. The book is Captured: How Neoliberalism Transformed the Australian State, and it's published by the Sydney University Press. We'll do some follow-up interviews around some of the chapters and the case studies, because it's pretty important stuff.